This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. They mill around in the snow, dressed as fur traders, Native Americans, or 18th century hunters, examining one another's costumes and black powder rifles. On their feet are traditional snowshoes, no metal here. These are wooden, and they look like big tennis rackets. Then the gun goes off.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
Yeah, thank you.
Don Kelleher from Methuen, Massachusetts. This is my 10th time. It's very unique because we're doing it in the olden days like they did in the 1700s. And it's wooden snowshoes with a black powder rifle, and that's how it is. Basic.
Don Kelleher was explaining the fun of the primitive biathlon in Jeffersonville. As he mentioned, it's done with black powder muskets and traditional snowshoes, and the competitors often dress in old-fashioned get-ups to run and shoot and hope to win or just to finish. It's one of the fun activities you can participate in when cabin fever sends you exploding outside into the snow and ice. Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to embrace the coming winter and talk all about the wild adventures people have outdoors in our region when the temperatures dip. You can share your favorite activities with us. Post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Michael in St. Johnsbury posted on Facebook that in the winter, his goal is, quote, just staying as warm and dry as possible. I hope some of you are a little more adventurous than Michael. Again, go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition. The Lake Maury Ice Skating Trail, on Lake Maury, of course, bills itself as the longest ice trail in the United States. And if you can time it so you're there when the lake is just black ice and you can see the bottom, the views extend from below your feet all the way up to the horizon line. Lisa Avery is director of fun at Lake Maury Resort in Fairleigh, and she joins us now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Jane. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you with us. I appreciate it. So how long is this trail?
The trail is 4.5 miles, and it goes around the entire lake.
And you don't start grooming it until there are at least 6 inches of ice. So when do you think it will open this winter?
That is the big money question. A couple years ago, we were skating on New Year's Eve, and last year, 2 weeks after January 1st, we were skating. So around the first or second week of January would be our best guess.
Is there ice on the lake right now?
No, not yet.
We're
getting lots of calls, though.
Are you really? Do people call? So people anticipate this and wait for it?
We have a huge following that start calling right after Thanksgiving.
So what do you get to see while you're skating around?
It's just so beautiful to be outside with nature. So I'll go out around 7:30 in the morning, and I check the trail. It's my excuse to get out and skate. And it's peaceful, and there's usually very few people out there. You might see some ice fishermen at the north end of the lake. So you go out, and you hear the lake with the ice shifting, and you can see eagles are usually out on the north end of the lake. It's quite spectacular.
So eagles out on the north part of the lake, I understand that sometimes the eagles are attracted by the ice fishermen?
Yeah, they might have a catch that they don't think is great, or they just want to have some fun, so they'll throw some fish out on the ice, and the eagles know it. So they're parked out on one particular tree out on the north end, and they're just waiting for a snack.
Have you seen these bald eagles?
Oh, we see them almost every day.
So that's pretty cool, I imagine.
It's spectacular.
Even if you see them every day, you still find it spectacular.
I was chasing one the other day. It was right outside our dining room, and I ran outside to take pictures every day.
So this trail is free, and it's groomed by the resort's equipment, but it is free, open to the public.
Yes.
You do offer rentals if people don't have their own skates, and I understand that you recommend going on Nordic skates. Why is
Nordic
that?
Blades. Those are what are made to go on all the cracks and the crevices and the bumps much smoother than a hockey or a figure blade.
And is that just to enhance your experience on the lake? You glide along?
Gliding is the perfect word. It's very freeing, very gliding, and because of the length of the blade and the way that it sits on top of the ice, you fly. You go twice as fast, twice as far with half the effort.
How long does it usually take to do this?
On Nordic blades, it could take you 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. On hockey skates or figure skates, it could take you up to, 45 minutes to an hour.
And do you recommend people treat this as exercise or sightseeing?
A little bit of both. If you're going to do it, you might as well enjoy it. So a little bit of both.
And you actually have sleds now, too, for people?
The newest thing we've got is called Kick Sparks, and they have runners on them and with covers that go on the ice. And so if for people that maybe aren't as comfortable on blades on the ice, this is a little more secure for them, and they can get out and enjoy the ice like everybody else.
So it's kind of like a scooter?
They're originated in Norway, and they used to be wooden, and there's a little seat in the front, but ours are metal with no seat in the front. They're like almost look like a walker.
Mm.
you wear your regular boots, and we put little grips on your boots, and you can just go out and glide.
So, Director of Fun, which is your title, sounds to me like you never have to do anything mundane like paperwork. Can you please not disabuse me of that notion?
It's a little bit of everything, but I have to say it's mostly just getting out and interacting with people out on the ice and having a great time.
Oh, that sounds like a perfect job.
It is the perfect job.
Well, Lisa Avery is the Director of Fun at Lake Maury Resort in Fairleigh, and she's been telling us about the Lake Maury Ice Skating Trail. Lisa, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Diane. Take care.
We're talking today about winter adventures, all of the things that you can do outside. We want to get excited along with you for the weather that we know is to come. So whether you like winter or not, there are some pretty exciting things to do, and we want to get some tips from our friends here about what we should be doing this winter. What are your favorite outdoor activities? You can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. Mary emailed to say, normally we'd be skiing, but last year during the long President's Weekend, we built our first igloo in Lyme, New Hampshire. I had been saving milk cartons, salad bins, and loaf pans. We finally got a cold snap, and it turned out perfect. We had no idea how to build an igloo, but we gave it a go, and she had a whole group of people. They worked on it for 3 days. Mary says, we're looking forward to our next cold snap. And she also provided a link for us to pictures of her creation. It really is pretty cool, and we are tweeting out her link to the photos from our Vermont Edition handle. So go to Twitter. You can share your tips, your adventures there as well. Mary says, I'm a long-term Vermonter. However, I grew up on the St. Lawrence River in the Thousand Islands, New York. I had a job at a hospital in Alexandria Bay, New York in 1979, which does have a six-month winter. As a young nurse, my first job was 11 to 7 nights. I would use the extreme cold as a challenge. I ice skated to work at 10 p.m. against the wind to get a half mile in 45 minutes. In the morning, at sunrise, I would sail back to the next bay in the glory of the minus 15 degree wind from the west. Mary says, I grew up in northern New York until my early 20s and then sought Vermont out because of the winters. I skied down Mad River Glen with my five-week-old boy on my chest after a 32-inch dump at minus 10 degrees down Catamount Trail. My son has become a ski instructor in Mammoth Lakes, and the love of cold lives on 28 years later. Wow. Thanks, Mary. Again, you can send us your tips, your favorite adventures, or call 1-800-639-2211. Now let's talk about a winter obstacle course called the Polar Bear Challenge. Rob Butler co-owns Shale Hill Obstacle Course in Benson. Hi, Rob. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jan. How are you today?
Well, thanks. And excited about winter all of a sudden.
Yes, indeed. We are too.
Yeah, I bet. So you have this 10K course with 80 obstacles, and the aim is to complete as many laps as you can in 8 hours. Rob, that sounds hellish. Why would anyone want to do it?
Well, it does sound hellish, and it is not hellish, however. Many races that are set up like this are kind of hellish, and we have developed this race to be a challenge, certainly, but a lot of fun along the way. There's a lot of races out there that just try to really abuse their people who try to run these things. We do not do that. We have fires going all over the place. We have a full buffet the whole time it's there, and it's really a lot of fun. People come out, and they challenge each other, and we have all different classes so people can go out and enjoy each other while they're on the course. Some people are really serious and really racing hard, and other people are really just having a good time.
Yeah, a full buffet sounds like maybe more for the people who are having a good time than the people who are really out there to win in it.
That is probably true. Most people enjoy that, though. We have a heated party barn here, so every lap you come in, you can go inside, get yourself kind of changed out into some new clothes if you want to, and then also get some food before you head back out again.
So what are some of these 80 obstacles?
Well, we have all sorts of different things, and a lot of things that are very military-based. You know, we have rope climbs, we have, you know, barbed wire crawls, we have traverses over water, we have all kinds of things. Now, in the wintertime, of course, the water is typically frozen, so it's just a traverse across the ice. We don't do any kind of submersion or anything like this in this race. It's really a fun event. There's so many obstacles, it's hard to even describe them all. We have many things that are, you use the same kind of skills you would use maybe doing rock climbing and things of that nature.
You started this, I understand, actually because of your own personal love of these types of obstacle courses, and you wanted to build your own for workouts and for practice.
That is true. Yeah, I started building one obstacle at a time. I built about 10 obstacles the first year, and we had no real intention of making it a business. And some people just started stopping by, and one Saturday we had, you know, four or five people here running around, and then a couple Saturdays later we had 50 people here running around, and I thought, maybe we better do something about this. So it has just grown over the last 6 years into a really great little business here in Benson, and we just have a good group of people that come in, out all the time and play. Some people use it as their gym, you know, just like you would go to the gym in the afternoon after work. Some people come here and use it as a gym. They go out and they play in the woods, and it's a, you know, it's a 150-acre 10K course, so it's quite a large area. So people come out and they just play and they get out in the woods and they have some quiet time to themselves. It's really a nice experience.
What kind of liability insurance do you need to have for something like that?
All of it. Actually, this is quite honestly, it's a very safe sport. Just like any other sport, you can get hurt doing it, but we have kept everything in control as far as that's concerned. We really try to make sure everybody's safe out there. We always take people out on the course for their first visit. We make sure that they are capable. We make sure that they understand how to do the obstacles correctly. We give them some hints and some tips and so forth. And then after they've come out once and we realize that we feel comfortable with them, they can come out as they want to and use the course on their own. So we do kind of go over things with everybody first to reduce the chance of anybody getting injured.
So people can use this sort of as their gym, as you said, and go out as often as they want. But the Polar Bear Challenge is one event, and the idea is to do this loop as often as you can, complete as many laps as you can in 8 hours.
That is exactly right.
And if people complete 4 laps, then you actually go on time to pick the winner?
Yes, if you have a couple people that can both get in 4 laps, it would be the first person to complete the laps. So whoever has the fastest time would win that. Now, we also have, if you go through the course and you happen to fail an obstacle, we have penalties and so forth. So if you cannot complete an obstacle, you can try the obstacles as many times as you like. But if you can't complete something, then you would do a penalty. And typically at our summer races, and typical with most obstacle race venues that are out there, you would do a penalty right there at the obstacle. And you would do push-ups or jumping jacks or burpees or whatever you might happen to do at that particular race. At the Polar Bear, it's unique that you don't do any penalties out on the course. You actually take a little poker chip and you collect them along the way. And when you get back to the main part of the venue, we have a little penalty box area. So you turn your tokens in and you get your penalties right there, and you do your penalties right in front of everybody. And it's really a fun penalty situation. We have a lot of laughs there, a lot of good time doing that. So people enjoy that. It also keeps people from being out in the cold and exposed, you know, without a lot of people out there on the course. It's nice to have them come back to the main venue and have everybody kind of collect right there.
So you get heckled by the other people who are watching while you're doing the penalties.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun. And we have fun, you know, we have fun penalties. Like last year, our most popular penalty was smashing an old wrecked car we had here with a sledgehammer. So if you came in, that would become your penalty. You might have to hit it, you know, 10 times with a sledgehammer. So we try to make it unique and kind of fun, something that people don't get to do every single day, you know.
How many times have in a row have you completed this course?
7 is my number.
Wow, that's a lot.
That was quite a few years ago.
How long did that take you?
A long time. I don't recall offhand. That was, you know, it was the better part of a full day.
Yeah, I mean, this is more than a marathon, plus 80 obstacles every 10K that you did.
Yeah, and we've had people that come out here at our 24-hour event, and they I think that the winner last year did something like 14 laps.
Wow.
So there's some amazing athletes that come out here. We have the benefit of coming here is, or one of the advantages to come to one of our races is, we're so small that beginners, intermediates, or experts, everybody can be here. You know, we're challenging for everybody, and we make it fun for everybody. You know, some people say, oh, this is going to be too hard for me and all that kind of stuff. It's not. It's really a good time. You can really kind of test your limits, see what you can make your body do, and leave here feeling really accomplished.
All right, you almost have me convinced, Rob.
It is a lot of fun. Absolutely.
Rob Butler is the co-owner of the Shale Hill Obstacle Course in Benson. The fifth annual running of the course, the Polar Bear Challenge, is Saturday, February 4th. Rob, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jan. I appreciate your time.
Now, just across Lake Champlain from Vermont are the Adirondacks, which are home to many of the country's best bobsledders. The athletes train alongside luge and skeleton athletes at the Mount Van Hovenberg Olympic Complex in Lake Placid. The sliding track there is a regular stop for the bobsledding World Cup races. It's also where, a couple of winters ago, Sage Van Wing, then a producer for Vermont Edition, had a chance to slide down the track in a bobsled.
It's a cold, sunny day here in the middle of the Adirondacks, and I'm standing halfway up the side of Mount Van Hovenberg. The sliding track here makes over 20 turns and drops 400 feet. John Lundeen is communications manager for the Olympic Regional Development Authority. He says bobsledding is a tough discipline and often a misunderstood sport.
You know, some people, they don't understand the sliding sports, whether it be bobsled, skeleton, or luge, but it's really no different than auto racing. First one to the finish line wins, second one silver, third gold, and so on down.
All right, attention.
This is my first day of work.
The track is now clear from the finish to start four. Tom Reggie with Heather and Chris.
Instead of pushing the sleds, early on, the athletes actually bobbed backwards and forwards, and that began the process of starting the sled. And then during the 1932 Olympic Games, which were right here in Lake Placid, that's the first games in which the athletes actually pushed the sled. Let's take the four-man as an example. You have your driver, your two pushers, and your brakeman. And they all work in unison to push that sled. And then they have to jump in. And that's where it looks like complete chaos, where, you know, guys are just jumping in the sled. But it's actually very well orchestrated because everybody's got to get into that sled as quickly as possible and as gracefully as possible as well.
You want to hop in here right behind him. Your legs are going to go right around each side of him, and you're going to scoot right up nice and tight, okay?
The professionals might be graceful,
all right,
but amateurs like myself are a little more awkward climbing into the sleds.
Grab them, okay?
Okay.
So you're just going to sit up straight and kind of hold yourself in place.
That's it? No strapping in? You just hold on? I got to hold on. All right. Hey, what's your name?
I'm Chris.
Hey, Chris. I'm Sage. Nice to meet you.
Stay relaxed. Don't overdrive the sled. Don't overthink it. If you're overdriving the sled, then you're just causing too much friction between the blades and the ice, and you're slowing yourself down. You can run the cleanest tangent, but in doing so, you may be oversteering the sled. So now you're the slowest. Because just the being relaxed and knowing where the pressure is on the curve so you can maintain your speed. You want to be on your steer. The sled may go in a direction that you don't want it to go, and you've got to make sure that you're in control of that sled. So the athletes are always on their game and always on their steer here when they compete in Lake Placid.
During the winter season, the drivers here might go down this track 30 or 40 times in one day. The Olympians who practice here usually get in only 3 or 4 runs a day. But some of the guys who are sledding down the hill with tourists like me also have their own Olympic ambitions.
My name is Jake Peterson. I am originally from Zimmerman, Minnesota. My dad was actually a bobsledder. My dad slid from like 83 to 93, and he actually coached the 94 games. I do work here and I train here. I live here full-time now, training to eventually make the Olympic bobsled team.
John Lundeen says the whole town of Lake Placid is rooting for the athletes they've seen riding down this track.
It's a constant thing. You are eating, breathing, sleeping bobsled every single day of your life. When you are committing yourself to become an Olympian, you are committing your life to the sport. You make sure every single movement you make is getting you closer to what you hope to achieve.
Well, all right, attention, clear the track. The track is now clear from the finish, 2-star 4-4.
We'll see how the next 4 years go, and if things go my way, hopefully I will be sliding in South Korea.
To watch them for the first time when they just jump into a sled and you kind of see them, you think, you know, they may or may not make it, and now they're competing in Sochi. We take pride in it because, you know, we're such an Olympic town. We watch it very intently.
That was produced by former Vermont Edition staffer Sage Van Wing at the Olympic Complex in Lake Placid. We are talking about some of the extreme fun you can have in the wintertime here in our region. We are embracing the weather. We are embracing the season. Ice climbing, ice swimming, ice skating. You get the picture. What's your bag? What do you recommend for an outdoor winter adventure in our region? Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're exploring some of the absolute most fun you can have outside this winter. Call 1-800-639-2211 or post on the Vermont Edition Facebook page with your favorite winter adventure activities. We're not really focused on the stuff everybody does, like downhill skiing and indoor rink skating. Today, we're looking at some of the quirkier or more extreme but equally fun stuff, like, for example, skating on the statehouse lawn. At least that's what organizers hope will be available to politically minded figure skaters this year. Nate Hausman is a member of the Put a Rink on It committee, which aims to build a skating rink in front of the Golden Dome. Hi, Nate. Nice to talk with you.
Jane, thanks for having me.
So why there? What's so special about skating in front of the statehouse?
Well, you know, a few friends and I were walking by the statehouse one cold wintry day and said, wouldn't it be cool to skate under the shadow of the statehouse, under the Golden Dome? And it's a nice flat area that doesn't see a ton of use in the winter months, but often there are folks out there in the summer playing frisbee or just enjoying. And said, and we thought, oh, geez, what an opportunity to put a rink on it.
So can't you just go out there with a hose in the middle of the night?
I wish that were the case. No, you know, we started this project a couple of years ago, and you know, when this idea came into being, and soon learned what a complicated process it is. So the state house is actually owned by the state; it's state property, and so we're working with a variety of stakeholders, Montpelier Alive, the city of Montpelier, and the state to ensure that this project happens. So right now we're waiting on final approval from the Department of Buildings and General Services, or BGS, for the rink to happen this year.
And you're hopeful. You think that this is going to happen, that BGS is going to say yes to this.
Yeah. So we started, you know, last year we submitted an application, a proposal, and there were a bunch of conditions that BGS came back with, and we just weren't able to meet those in the time frame we had hoped. This year we've you know, done some fundraising, done some work on our application, have come back, and we think we've reached consensus on all the major issues with BGS. So we expect to receive approval, you know, very shortly.
And then people will be skating before New Year's, maybe?
Yeah, that's the idea. So sometime the end of December, beginning of January, obviously we're a little bit at the mercy of the weather.
So do you see any legislator versus lobbyist or executive versus judicial pickup hockey games in our future, or is it just going to be a free-for-all?
What a great idea. No, unfortunately, you know, one of the things we've learned in this process is that there are a lot of hockey games and, you know, for hockey teams, there's a lot of rinks that are open, but there's not a lot of just open skate time. So for liability reasons and other reasons, you know, we anticipate this just being in an open skate. And, you know, they call the state house the people's house. So we envision this as the people's rink, and it'll be free and open to the public for folks to learn how to skate or just skate around and enjoy it.
Nate Houseman is a member of the Put a Rink on It committee, which I just have to say I love saying, and they're attempting to get a state house skating rink built this winter. Nate, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you, Jane.
Again, listeners, share your favorite wintertime adventure activities with us. Our number is 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Amanda is from Winooski. She says she enjoys ice diving by way of scuba. Wow. Let's go to Dave, who's calling in from East Clarendon. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hi there.
Hey.
Well, we have, this is actually all year long, but we do it all winter long, ice, snow, rain, whatever. It's called a game we invented a number of years ago called Crobachi. It's kind of like off-road croquet with a few throws, and we make our own clubs out of firewood and saplings and things like that. And we'll play in the woods or in somebody's backyard and set up a course with wickets that are named like Rainbow Unicorn Ridge and Hubris and the Devil's Playground. And we actually have an archivist who's working on her third book about it. A
third book? There's enough to fill three books about this game?
Oh, yeah. It's really nuts. We're all best friends until we get on the course, and then we all have big arguments, and the whole neighborhood can hear us screaming and hollering.
Well, Dave, thanks for telling us about it. I'm going to have to find those books now. Three of them. I'm impressed, and it sounds like a great activity. Nola is calling in from Ripton. Hey, Nola, what's your thing?
Hey, Jane, how are you today?
Good.
Good. This is an activity that I learned about almost 20 years ago, and I had my Siberian Husky and my Shepherd Husky. Apparently, originating in Norway, it's an activity called ski-juring. And it's pretty much designed for those that don't have enough dogs to have a team and a sled. But what you do is you have a harness that goes on each of your dogs or one of your dogs and a harness that you strap around your waist with the right number of lines coming off of it. So I had three dogs that I ski-jured with and then two and then one. You click yourselves all together. You grab your cross-country skis. And off you go. The pulling isn't always fast. Sometimes they slow down. But it's just an amazing experience of sort of like the concept of the Trinity, three in one. Because you don't do what you want to do all the time. The dogs don't do what they want to do, but you work together. And it's amazing.
Nola, thanks for calling in. I appreciate hearing. Let's get one more in here. Beth in Wheelock. Hi, Beth. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling sort of on the tails of that phone call. A couple of years ago, I gave my family a dog sled tour for Christmas, and they had a wonderful time. Some of the companies in Vermont, if you just Google dog sledding in Vermont, you can find lengthy tours or fairly short tours. The guide that we had up here in the Northeast Kingdom was wonderful, and my family had a great time dog sledding. So there are companies all over Vermont, and I think it's just a great experience.
Beth, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, dog sledding, something you can often do around here in the wintertime. So we're talking about things to do in the winter, and we were hearing a minute ago about the rink on the State House lawn that the Put a Rink on It committee is hoping to build. But maybe you prefer your ice experiences to be more vertical. There is some world-class ice climbing in Vermont. So break out your crampons and head up to Lake Willoughby if you really want to get in the spirit. Kel Rossiter joins us now. He's the owner and lead guide of Adventure Spirit Rock, Ice, and Alpine Experiences. Hi, Kel.
Hello there.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what it's like to climb over, say, by Willoughby in the dead of winter and go ice climbing.
Willoughby is a stunning place, long, narrow lake, and the cliff rises out of the sort of the what ends up being the east side. And Those cliffs are some of the highest cliffs in the lower 48 for climbing on, and quite vertical, so they have a reputation for being pretty stout climbs, and climbing there is stunning. You're perched way atop this ice cliff, and you can hear the lake below cracking and buckling as the winter temperatures set in or set out. And it really is a unique and phenomenal experience.
And this is world-class ice climbing? I mean, this is good stuff?
This is great stuff. There's a fellow named Joe Josephson who's known as one of the all-time greatest ice climbers, and he called it the single greatest ice climbing cliff on the planet.
So what's the best way to start if you've never been ice climbing?
Well, ice climbing is accessible to people in all ages and stages of life. It has an image of being sort of an extreme sport, but in fact, it can be quite friendly to a variety of, as I say, ages of people and body types. And so the best way to get started, certainly learning some of the fundamentals of belaying that you could practice in a rock gym, and then you would have to access some of the equipment, but then going out and getting with some proper instruction, learning about some of the technique of kicking and swinging, and making your way up the ice cliff.
And that's where you come in? You help people with that kind of stuff?
That is, yeah. And it's a wonderful thing to do because, as is pointed out in this whole episode here, learning to enjoy the Vermont winter is a pretty key thing to enjoying Vermont, and as well as for visitors from other areas of the Northeast.
You mentioned that it's helpful to know some of the skills that you could learn from a rock climbing gym, like belaying. Do you have to be a rock climber in order to be an ice climber?
No, not at all. And in fact, at some level, some people find ice climbing easier because rock climbing, where you have to hold on to very tiny holds and maybe have a specialized muscle set. In fact, ice climbing, you're always holding on to these tools. So the grips are rather like a door handle, and with some appropriate balance and positioning, keeping your feet underneath you, there's a lot less necessity for small muscles holding your weight up. You can just use your legs and your long arms.
And you brought some of the tools? What did you bring for us here?
Well, I've got a couple of ice screws and
you're going to have to make noise because this is radio. Nobody can see it.
Sure. So I've got a couple of ice screws here, and those are put in the ice if you are doing what's called lead climbing, although entry-level people would want to try top roping, meaning having a rope set up already. So the screws are put in as anchors, and then I've got a ice climbing tool. It looks like a large sort of ice pick or a sort of a hammer with a pick on the end, and it's got huge hand grips that make holding onto it a lot more friendly.
And so you'd have one in each hand, and that's what you're using?
You would have two of those. That's right. Yeah, two of those, one in each hand. And then you've got these medieval-looking spikes that go on your feet that are known as crampons. And the ice climbing crampons are particularly sharp, and they have more teeth than maybe ones you might use for, say, climbing snow.
So you can rent all this equipment. If you wanted to become a real practiced ice climber and get your own equipment, how expensive a sport is it to get into?
It does have a certain barrier to entry in that regard. But on the contrary, once you've got the equipment, unlike, say, lift resort skiing or something of that sort, once you've got the equipment and the appropriate training, it really becomes very economical. And having made that comparison, you could get the basic ice climbing equipment for top roping for far cheaper than a season pass at a ski resort.
You're not throwing any shade on ski resorts.
They're awesome. I've got a season pass at Smug's. I'm headed there next.
So how did you get into this, and what do you really like about it?
I did a graduate degree down at University of New Hampshire, and I had been rock climbing for a while prior, and a friend of mine there in the program got me interested in ice climbing and showed me some of the fundamentals. He had an experience in the sport and instructing others, and so we explored some of the ice around the area down there, came up toward the North Conway, New Hampshire area, which is also popular for ice climbing, but ultimately I set my sights on exploring what Vermont offers, and I moved here over 10 years ago now, and have been loving and exploring all that Vermont Ice offers. Smuggler's Notch, Willoughby, and numerous other smaller crags are all over the state. So great options.
Kel Rossiter is owner and lead guide of Adventure Spirit Rock, Ice, and Alpine Experiences. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
We got a note from another ice climber. Greg in Salt Lake City says, though I moved from Vermont in 1990 and headed west in pursuit of bigger snow, my love for winter recreation began as a student at UVM when I was introduced to ice climbing in Smuggler's Notch and Lake Willoughby, as well as backcountry skiing on Mount Mansfield. My wife and I also enjoyed ice skating on Lake Champlain, especially those magical moments at sunset. And although I now only return to Vermont in the summers, it is winter in Vermont that I really miss the most. I wish all of Vermont a cold and snowy upcoming winter. And more to come for us as we embrace the weather that's about to descend on us. What's your favorite outdoor adventure activity? Call 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We're talking today about adventure activities in the wintertime, a way to really get excited about, you know, what's going to happen, whether you like it or not. Cold weather, perhaps some snow and ice, short days, long nights. Might as well embrace it. We live here. We love it here. Let's have some adventures in the winter weather. Anne in Craftsbury says, for anyone interested in enjoying the winter woods and also lounging around the wood stove in your long underwear, an annual gathering of snow walkers happens every November in Fairlie, Vermont. Enthusiasts for traditional winter travel on snowshoes, pulling toboggans full of gear and good food, camping in wall tents with wood stoves, get together to swap stories and learn new skills. New participants are encouraged. This is one of the friendliest crowds I know, though most of us seem to be gaining gray hairs with the years. What about you? What are you up to? 1-800-639-2211 is the number to call to share your enthusiasm with us. Again, 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Tim is calling in from Putney. Hi, Tim. Go right ahead.
Thanks for having the show. It's wonderful. One thing I do every winter that's great fun, and especially for people who have a hard time putting their bicycle away in the winter, there are studded snow tires available for bicycles, and that enables you to keep riding, on especially on back roads, and be safe. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful time to ride. It's a little bit like cross-country skiing. And where you don't have cross-country ski trails available, riding bicycle on backcountry roads is a wonderful way to enjoy the winter. And sometimes after a snowfall and the road's been plowed, it can be some of the most serene times to be outside. I recommend it highly.
Tim, what's the coolest thing you've ever seen while you were doing your studded tire snow mountain biking?
Well, you do see animals and birds, deer, and because you're going so quietly along the road, you're not driving, and that's part of it. But also, just the scenery and the light that comes through is just gorgeous, especially towards the end of the afternoon when the sun angle is very low, the light coming through and the light coming through snowfall and snowflakes, especially if the sun is shining, is just wonderful.
Well,
it's
Tim,
really like being in a dream.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, easy to do. We also, every time we have a winter biking show, hear from a lot of people who do winter biking, not always mountain biking, but fat tires, and who are getting out there on the roads, which could be seen as an extreme sport or could just be seen as your commute to work. You can tell us yours, 1-800-639-2211. Penny is in Richmond. Hi, Penny. Go ahead. What are you up to?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I am calling in with a really fun adventure winter outing. It's actually a late winter outing called the Cochrane's Nordic Cross event, which takes place at Cochrane Ski Area in late winter. And it's a fun, festive, and competitive citizens Nordic ski race for all ages. and uphill, downhill, slalom gates, jumps, and obstacles, all on one pair of skis. And we draw skiers, elite skiers from the collegiate circuit, Middlebury College, UVM, other schools, as well as families with little kids, because we also have a shorter course for kids. And if you don't want to race, it's really fun to volunteer and help do some of the timing or be on the course to direct people where to go. Super spectator friendly and topped off with a hot slopeside syrup pancake feast.
Oh, Penny, it sounds awesome. Thank you so much for telling us about it. I appreciate that. Let's get another call in here from David in Dorset. Hi, David. What do you get up to in the wintertime?
Hey, Jane, how you doing? Thanks for having me on. One of the things I really look forward to come wintertime is something called platform tennis. A lot of people know it as paddle tennis. It's strictly a winter sport, and it's played on an elevated platform with lines just the same as a tennis court, but the platform is actually smaller in size. The court is surrounded with chicken wire, and you play the same kind of game as you would in tennis with a rubbery ball, and you play shots over the net and off of the screen, and it's fast moving, really wonderful. You can play during the day or you can play at night under the lights. It's just a fast and fantastic game.
Oh, David, that sounds cool. I haven't even heard of it. I'm going to go Google it when I get off the air so I can see what you're telling me about. I kind of picture it in my head, and I hope I have the right picture. Thanks for that, David. Now, on Thanksgiving, a lot of running enthusiasts go for a turkey trot before they chow down on the big meal. On New Year's Day, it's a polar bear plunge that captures the fancy of many a daredevil, ringing in the new year with a breath-snatching dip into icy water. But ice swimming doesn't have to confine itself to one holiday a year. There are plenty of times and places you can swim in just barely still liquid water, if that's your thing. The Morrisville Rotary Club sponsors a plunge and donates the proceeds to a local group. This year, the charity is the Morrisville Youth Girls Soccer Team, which is raising money to go on a trip to Europe. And the Lake Elmore Polar Splash is on Saturday, February 11th. Joe Gagne is a member of the Morrisville Rotary Club, and he's on the line with us now. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. So, February 11th, will you be plunging?
I actually just committed to do it, so believe it or not, I am going to jump in the lake.
This will be your first time?
Yeah, and I might be a little crazy.
Yeah, you might be, but you know, you're in good company, apparently.
Yeah, we have about 70 to 100 jumpers every year, so, and really looking forward to it. It's so exciting, and I actually can't wait to do it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So how do you actually do this polar plunge? You cut a triangle out of the ice?
Yes, we generally cut a triangle out of the ice, and people go one at a time. If you have a group or a team, you can go as a team. And we, of course, have some trained people in the water, to get people out, just to make sure that everybody's safe. So it's really well organized, well run, and it's just a ton of fun.
So you basically jump in, go all the way under, dip your head under and everything, and then you pull yourself out and get help from those volunteers?
Exactly. And some people go really far down, and other people just kind of dip their toes in the water and barely get in. But it's really neat seeing some of the people jump in and just go head first and way down. So it's really neat.
How deep is it where you're cutting the hole?
It's pretty deep. I think it's at least 10 feet. So it's very, very deep and very safe, again, with the divers in there to get you out. So a lot of people going all the way in. Really, really neat.
So people can also do this in teams, I understand.
Yes. Yeah, there are. You can sign up as an individual or as a team, and you can sign up on our website. I'm looking at it right now, polarsplash.dojiggy.com. Or you can just search Morrisville Rotary Polar Plunge, and you'll get there easily, too. And just go ahead and get your team signed up, and everybody's welcome.
And we actually have a link to that up on our show page, the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. And you are raising money for the youth girls soccer team to go to Europe. So every year this is for a different charity?
Yeah, that's right. Yes. And this is the first time we've partnered with the Morrisville Girls Soccer Club. We're very excited. They're bringing a lot of excitement to it. They're doing a great job selling sponsorships, and they have a real interest in doing this because the more money they raise, actually the longer they can stay in Europe. So And we're just hoping to raise as much money as possible to make this as rewarding a trip for them as possible.
Why do you think people want to do this foolhardy activity, Joe?
I think it's fun. I think it's fun. It's just, you know, I think a lot of people, especially in Vermont, they love to test themselves and they like to test the extremes a little bit. And I think that's really the reason I want to do it. Not only is it fun, but it's a good test of my will to, you know, see that I can see this thing through. So.
Joe Gagne is part of the Morrisville Rotary Club, which sponsors the Lake Elmore Polar Plunge. Again, the event this year is, well, I guess it's technically next year, but this winter is Saturday, February 11th, and all the proceeds will help the Morrisville Youth Girls Soccer Team go to Europe. Joe, thanks very much for talking with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, we have time for one more very quick call. Jerry is on the line with us from St. Albans Bay. Hi, Jerry. You've got 20 seconds. Give us your wintertime adventure.
I'll make it fast. It's called snow kiting. So on the frozen lake or big open field with snow, I can put my harness on, grab my control bar and a big kite and go kite snow kiting or wear a snowboard or skates on my feet, depending on the condition of what I'm on. And the kite will take me. I live in the islands, so I can go exploring around the islands, but pretty fast pace and a lot of fun in the cold.
Oh, that sounds awesome. And hey, you could just take your kite and go all the way down to Burlington, commute that way on the ice. Jerry, that's so cool. Thank you so much for sharing it. And that's going to wrap up our winter adventure show. You can keep sharing your favorite adventures. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition, and you can share your comments right there for everyone else to see. Now, tomorrow, we're going to check in on Governor-elect Phil Scott's transition process. Plus, we sample VPR's new podcast, Brave Little State. The current episode features some of Vermont's Native Americans talking about the current status of the Abenaki in the state. Join us for that conversation tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening and happy adventuring.